What does it mean to be passionately alive? Well, for me, it's about reawakening the full human experience of life. Passionately alive is about being in relationship, with ourselves, with each other, and with life. It's about a deep state of connection, and it's not about hype or drama. I think that a lot of people imagine being passionately alive as like being on a high, being right out there on a peak experience all the time, being happy and rosy. But for me, being passionately alive means it's about embracing life as it is, embracing the experience that's rising in this moment. So it's about a deep state of connection to what is. It's about allowing ourselves to be authentic moment to moment. It seems that there's basically two kinds of experiences. There's peak experiences and there's valley experiences. Peak experiences are when we're right out there and the adrenaline's running and we're on a high. And that's a kind of a rare experience for most of us and not a sustainable one for human life. Valley experiences, on the other hand, are much more subtle, and it's a finer energy that we're talking about. It's in a quieter place, usually, and it's about being deeply connected to ourselves and to the experience that's rising in the moment. So a valley experience may be happened when we're in a relationship with somebody and we might just be holding somebody that we love and we're experiencing this soft vibration of energy in this intimate embrace. A valley experience may also arise when we're sitting quietly in meditation and we have this gentle rise of energy welling up through us. And peak experiences would be like bungee jumping or being in a dramatic experience, maybe like in an argument, or maybe as an athlete winning a race would be a peak experience, or maybe getting married or giving a presentation in front of everybody, and it's right out there and high. Now, you may know people that are often seeming to be on the wave of a peak experience and they might appear to be passionately alive, but my question would be, are they really in touch with themselves in those moments? Because often, as the energy rises within us, we actually lose touch with the actual experience of what's happening for us, and we get caught up in the drama. So the work that I do in Passionately Alive is about reconnecting with an authentic experience of ourselves as we are, not necessarily being on a high or being in peak. And the work divides into two basic areas. The first part looks at life as being made up of this masculine principle. The masculine principle is related to consciousness and awareness. And there's the feminine principle, which is related to energy and matter. Now, in general terms, men identify with this masculine principle and women identify and express predominantly the feminine principle, but this is a generalization and it's important to note that we both have both aspects, masculine and feminine, within us, and we're exhibiting both principles. But to give you a clearer example, I think that it's fair to say that men have this sense of containment about them and a sense of consciousness and purpose and direction within their being. Women, on the other hand, tend to exhibit more energy and matter. They exhibit more movement, there's more flow and more emotion, whereas the masculine principle is more associated with consciousness. And it's important to live a healthy and balanced life to have both of these masculine and feminine principles working in balance. In its essence, if you go into the masculine principle and you sit in stillness and you raise consciousness, then there's a gateway there to mystery. Mystery is one of the deepest places that opens in this masculine field, masculine principle. And conversely, in the feminine principle, we find that there's energy and matter, and instead of stillness, we find that there's a dance or movement happening, or unfolding. And so the feminine principle, in its essence, is exhibiting passion, emotion, energy. And being passionately alive is, in my mind, about embracing both this masculine principle of conscious awareness of who we are moment to moment, and also embracing the free expression of our feminine energy, our passion, our emotion. So being passionately alive is about being open to life and embracing what is. Now, that's easy to do when things are good and we're having a great time, but it's a very different story when we're entering into something that's more difficult, such as when we're feeling stressed or anxious. There's a tendency that we have to say, I want to get out of this experience and move away from this suffering into something else. So we don't always say yes to every experience that happens, and it's in saying no to the experience and trying to resist what's rising within us that tends to get us stuck and tends to cause more suffering in our lives. We believe that the healing, that growth happens by embracing the experience or the feeling that's rising in the moment. When we embrace it and we allow it to be fully present, then what we find is that we automatically move through it. So this is a deep state of loving ourselves. I believe that the best definition of love is to be you, my favorite radio station. Being ourselves is a deep form of loving. Now, when it comes to feeling everything that's rising, often we would rather be somewhere else, and so we split off from the experience that rises. And in doing that, we lose touch with ourselves. Underpinning all of this is a belief that the truth takes us home. And if you stop and think about it for a moment, do you really think that not living your truth, not listening to your truth, is really going to get us to where we need to be living the life that we're meant to live? I don't think so. And I think that the journey home is based on connecting with our truth, and it leads us to love and to a state of oneness. But it's not always a smooth road. Often, if we follow our truth, it may mean upsetting other people, disappointing other people sometimes to honor ourselves, causing conflict sometimes, causing unease, and losing the peace. We like to refer to this way of living, of following our truth and honoring the truth, as entering the fire. It means not being a pleaser, not being necessarily submissive all the time, but instead coming forward and engaging with our partner and speaking our minds directly. There's a story about a man who falls off a cliff, and as he's falling down the cliff, there's a little branch sticking out, and he grabs the branch. And he's holding onto the branch, and he's calling out for help. Help! Help! And there's just silence and the wind blowing past him. So he calls out again, help, help. And all of a sudden a voice comes from the clouds and it says, what do you want? And he says, help, help, I need help. And he says, and the voice comes from the clouds says, I can help you, but you must do what I say. And the man calls out, yes, I'll do anything, anything at all. And he says, who is this anyway? And the voice says, this is God speaking here. And he says, well, help me, God. I'll do anything. Just tell me what to do. So God says, let go of the branch. And the man cries out, is there anyone else up there? very often I find that when we really sit with what we're experiencing, we don't want it, and we're looking for something else. We're looking for an easy way out. We're looking for a way off the hook. But we can run away, but we can't get away from the experience that's arising. And so sometime we're going to need to stop and feel and experience and go through what's rising. So Passionately Alive is really about embracing the human experience. And what we need to realize is that as human beings, every experience that we have is made up of the physical, the mental, the emotional, and a spiritual component. And our culture has been founded on the physical and the mental. We've looked at the world in a very physical way. We've mined the world. We've gone for material comfort. And we've pursued the intelligence of our intellect, our mind power. And we've done amazing things. You know, it's incredible what we can do. We can pick up a phone and call somebody on the other side of the planet. We can put men on the moon. We can fly people through the sky. We've just done amazing things with our minds. We also are coming to the end of the limits of that mind without the heart. And what we're witnessing across the planet is a reawakening of the importance of the feeling side of human experience, as well as the mental side, the thinking side. And what we're seeing is a return to the values of quality of life, not just quantity of life, not just material advancement. We're now considering the quality of our environment and the quality of the lifestyle that we're living, and we're starting to emphasize the importance of those aspects. So we're witnessing a worldwide trend of awakening, of realization that relationship is important, and coming back into relationship. And that's a necessary factor, because what we've tended to do in the past is when we felt uncomfortable, we've moved away from that discomfort to try to make ourselves more comfortable. And we keep on using the resources in the planet to try to ease our discomfort and become more and more comfortable. And it's putting enormous pressure on our environment. And we need to learn to change our attitude to this discomfort. And instead of always attempting to move away from it, we need to learn how to embrace some level of discomfort so that we can enter through it. And what we find when we do that is we actually enter into deeper relationship with ourselves and deeper relationship with life and each other. Of course, you can't have a relationship with anybody else until you have a relationship with yourself. And we move away from ourselves by being busy, on the go, not settling, not being with ourselves. We keep ourselves frantically occupied, distracted from what we're experiencing. We eat food that doesn't promote aliveness. We don't maintain physical well-being by being fit and active. We're very often on the move away from experience, where we've grown up in a culture that teaches us that heaven is someplace else. And so what I'm advocating here is that we embrace the experience that's rising. Now, in particular, that involves embracing our emotional self. As I mentioned before, have a physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual self. But we've grown up in a culture that teaches us that emotions are not okay, that to be emotional is to be weak, that to be sad, you know, we need to do something about that and cheer up or get on with it. We've been trained. We should look on the bright side of things. We should feel happy about what we've got, and we should deny our sadness. And if we're angry, we should calm down. We should be more understanding. We shouldn't get upset. And if we're scared, we shouldn't do that either, that we're weak or we're chicken or coward to feel fear. But what we find, in fact, is that these three emotions of fear, anger, and sadness are essential ingredients in being human. They make us human, and they have an important role to play in our lives. So before we go any further, I think it's important to ask the question, what is an emotion? And in my understanding, an emotion has basically two ingredients to it. The first ingredient is that emotion is an energy, and the second one is that it carries with this energy a message for us. So each of our emotions contains a certain energy, and it has a good purpose in our lives to move us in a certain direction, to take a certain action in response to the situation that we're in. So we ask ourselves, well, what's the good purpose of sadness then? And what we see in our culture is a culture that has lost to a large extent its capacity to grieve sadness. And so what we tend to do is when we get hurt or we lose something, instead of allowing ourselves to cry and to grieve and to release this emotion, we tend to shut ourselves down. And in doing that, we lose connection to life, we lose our sense of passion, our aliveness, we lose touch with deeper aspects of ourselves. Sadness is a natural emotion that rises when we lose something, when we have a loss. If you have a parent die or a loved one who dies, it's natural to feel sad about that, and it's important to allow that grieving process to happen. If we don't allow it to happen, then it means that we will get stuck somewhere and we won't be able to move on and open into other relationships. Just think about it for a moment. Children have the capacity to grieve, and they express their sadness openly and they keep on moving forward. But as adults, we tend to shut down when we get hurt, and we contract and we get stuck in our lives. You may remember the first time that you fell in love, and it was teenage love and open and bliss, and you were there and you were available to the other person. You said, I'll do anything for you. And then that ends, and we get hurt. The relationship ends, and we shut down on that pain, the ending of that relationship. And we go into another relationship, and we're a little bit more cautious this time. We're a bit more held. We don't expose ourselves so deeply, and we engage. And invariably, we get rejected, or that relationship ends, and there's a certain loss there that we tend to contract on, and we shut down. And then we go into another relationship, and we reveal even less. And so we keep on diminishing our aliveness and our availability to life and to love. And the converse is true for kids. If you think about kids playing, imagine a kid, for instance, a young boy walking along a wall. If he falls off the wall, he hits the ground, what does he do? Invariably, if he's hurt himself, he'll start to cry. And he lets that grief come through. We look back and we see the boy again another 5 or 10 minutes. And where is he? He's back up on the wall again, and he's walking along the wall. And he hasn't got hurt and contracted and said, oh, no, no, I'm not going back on the wall because I know the wall leads to pain. Instead, he's allowed the pain to be expressed, and that's given him the freedom to move back again, back into his life, and to open fully. But what we tend to do in relationships is we get hurt, we say, no, 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 I'm not going to enter into another relationship because I know they just lead to pain. And so we diminish the vulnerability and the level that we're allowing ourselves to go into relationship, because not because we've got hurt in the past, but because we're carrying the past hurts and we haven't been able to allow them to come through. So grieving our sadness is a very important function that we need to allow ourselves to do. And there's been some research that's been done recently that shows that when we cry, we actually release hormones from the brain that are essential for good health. So this old idea of being strong and just bracing ourselves to get through some sad experience is being seriously questioned in the research and the understanding that's happening. And I think that we need to realize that sadness is not a bad thing, it's a very good thing, and it allows us to open more and more deeply to connect with ourselves at deeper levels. Well, you may ask me, oh, that's very well for sadness, but what about anger? How could anger be a good thing? What we find is that in our culture we tend to get shamed for being emotional. We tend to get shamed. We're being told that it's bad to be emotional, it's bad to be angry, and our experiences usually fit that training in that. And most of our experiences around anger are associated with pain or suffering, that somebody is getting hurt here. And it's very important, just at the start of this discussion, to realize that when I say anger, I'm not talking about aggression or abuse or attack or violence. I'm talking about pure anger. And anger in its purest state is an emotion, and as such, it's an energy. And this energy, this anger, is designed for a good purpose. But unfortunately, most of us have learned to express our anger in hurtful or attacking ways, and so it ends being aggressive or violent. And this is abusive expression of this anger or this energy. Now, so what's the good purpose of anger? Well, anger is an energy that rises when there's some level of violation of our boundaries, when we don't feel fully respected by somebody else. And it's an energy that comes into being, it rises within us, and it's designed to bring us forward, to empower us to stand up for ourselves and to tell whoever it is that's not respecting our space to back off, to respect us, to listen to me. So anger is a very powerful energy. It's an essential energy that we need to embrace, and it's a powerful energy that creates change. If you think back through history, you'll find that a lot of powerful changes, transformations in our cultures happen because somebody got angry and they channeled this energy into a creative expression by using it to instigate changes. So you can use your anger when you learn to channel it in non-attacking or non-critical ways. You can use this energy to empower yourself to make positive changes in your life. Now, so our anger is an important emotion. What about our fear, though? You know, we tend to imagine fear as a bad thing. And I sometimes, driving around, I see these stickers on the car that say, "No fear." So there's this implication that to be afraid is to be weak, or to be cowardly, to be a chicken or a scaredy cat we get trained at school. These are the shaming training that we have on being afraid, being emotional, being upset, being afraid. Now, if we suppress our fear, what we find is that it turns into anxiety. And what you'll find with each of the emotions, it's not the emotion in themselves that causes the stress, it's the suppression of them that turns them into this convoluted and contracted or tight ball of emotion or of energy within us, and that manifests as stress in our physical bodies, and it upsets the whole flowing system within our bodies. So the question right now is, what's the good purpose of fear? And the response, my response, is that fear is an emotion, an energy that's designed to heighten our state of alertness. And it's designed to kick in when we're in some level of danger. Now, if you don't have any fear at all, then you're in great danger, because you won't be responding to the times when you need to heighten your awareness, when you need to apply yourself in a specific, focused way. For instance, if you don't have any fear and you go to a car sales yard and you just go blindly into the situation and you don't listen to your inner feelings, then you can get yourself into a lot of trouble. But sometimes when people aren't being honest with us, we will feel a level of uneasiness, a subtle level of fear that's rising to the, and that fear is telling us to take caution here, to be careful, to find out, to pursue this issue further. So fear is there to heighten our alertness to the situation that's present. I think that a good example of how we can understand this is to think about, imagine yourself in, say, New York at night time, you're lost and you're walking down a dark alleyway. I think it would be normal to feel some level of fear there. And if you look inside your body to see what would be happening in that situation, what you'd find is that your heart was pumping strongly, the adrenaline was flowing through your body, and your physical body would be on alert so that if somebody jumped out, you could take action. You'd notice also that your vision was acute and that your hearing was very sharp, so that you'd be on razor's edge, ready to take action. And that's a good thing and a necessary thing. For instance, if you're in a business and the business is not doing so well and you're just blindly traveling along, not in touch with your feelings, not realizing the desperate situation that you could be heading towards, you're in a very dangerous situation. But if you manage to feel the fear of this business that's not going so well, then that gives you an opportunity to raise your awareness around the situation and maybe to take some action that could prevent a future catastrophe for you. So we're in a grave amount of danger when we're not feeling our fear. The problem for most of us is that instead of feeling these little emotions when they first arise, we tend to brace ourselves and resist them and tuck them away. And we have this attitude because our emotions have been shamed in our culture that they don't exist, that we've treated them as if they're not actually real. But emotions are energy, and when you feel an emotion, that energy occurs in your physical body. And if you don't allow yourself to experience it fully, it doesn't go away. Instead, it gets stored in your body and builds up. And then, in the future, when you get yourself into a similar situation, you not only have the emotion that's rising from that situation being triggered off, but you also have emotion from past situations which have been similar. So what we tend to get is an overreaction to any situation. So when we're dealing with fear, instead of just being mildly afraid or mildly cautious in a situation, we can often become quite distressed, quite anxious, quite terrified even by a seemingly small situation, because it's plugging us into all of the past situations where we haven't allowed ourselves to move with the energy of fear. And unfortunately, we've lost our capacity to move with our emotions in our culture. And this is one of the major things that I'm interested in training people to reclaim in Passionately Alive, is the full embrace of our emotions. But don't just think that it's our sadness, our anger, and our fear that gets suppressed, because it's not. It's also our joy that gets suppressed as we're growing up. Do you remember what would have happened to you if you'd been that bright, bubbly child, exuberant and spontaneous and just celebrating life? Very often, when we've been that kind of a child, we've been told to quieten down, not to make so much noise, that children should be seen and not heard. That's enough. We've had enough fun for today. And so what we learn to do is we learn to dampen our enthusiasm and our natural vitality, and we become rather contained and restricted. Now, of all of the emotions, possibly enthusiasm is the most valuable, because learning to arouse enthusiasm is what gives us our motivation in life. It's what drives us to achieve our goals, to be a success, to get what we want in our lives. Our enthusiasm is a fantastic emotion, and unfortunately, we don't celebrate our wins and we don't allow ourselves to be very enthusiastic in our culture. We have in Australia this lingering tall poppy syndrome where if we have a victory, if we have a win, we tend to be kind of very constrained and restrained around expressing our joy and celebrating that victory. But celebrating a victory is a very important thing to do, and what you'll notice if you look at the sports people today is they're all starting to celebrate their victories much more. The reason that they're doing that is because their sports psychologists are telling them to do it. So when you see a tennis player and he hits a good shot, he'll often give himself a little pat on the back. Now, what that does is it starts to program into our subconscious, hey, I'm okay, I can do good things. Unfortunately, though, most of our experiences have been that we tend to heighten the experiences when we make a mistake rather than when we do something very well. So what we tend to do is when we make a mistake, we tend to punish ourselves. We tend to crucify ourselves by this merciless criticism and putting ourselves down. And so what we're doing when we're doing that is we're actually programming ourselves, we're driving into our consciousness all of the mistakes that we make, and we're raising awareness around the fact that we can't always do things right, and that tends to undermine our self-confidence. Whereas celebrating our victories and acknowledging the things that we do well tends to drive into our consciousness, hey, I can do some things well, and that tends to build more confidence, and that tends to build more successful experiences. So it's very important to realize that all of our emotions have a good purpose in our lives, and what we need to do to love ourselves fully is to embrace all of these emotions. Now, I've talked about the four primary emotions: sadness, anger, fear, and joy. And each of these emotions have different derivations, such as derivations of sadness would be, say, moodiness or glumness, or in its extreme, depression. And depression is an important state in relation to passionately alive, because depression is the end state of suppressing our emotions to an extreme degree. So suppression is a result of suppression, and it's said that depression is going to be the number one disease of our future. And so what I can see is this whole area of emotional enlivenment has a very important place to play in our culture. And I was talking to a friend the other day, and he said to me, it's amazing that he's just found out recently that a number of his friends are taking antidepressant medication, and these people seem to be living fairly normal lives. So it's almost as if this antidepressant medication is becoming a part of our lives. And from my experience, this is simply because we are failing to meet our emotional aspect. We don't know how to manage our emotions in healthy ways. And instead, what we tend to do is we suppress them, and they cause stress in us, they deaden our aliveness, and then we tend to do dysfunctional behaviors of what we call acting these emotions out. Now, when we act an emotion out, instead of allowing the emotion to be expressed in the moment, it tends to drive us to take actions. For instance, if we don't express our anger directly and say what it is that we really want to say, then often we will act this anger out. And we might act our anger out by cutting somebody else off, by avoiding relationship with them, by withdrawing our presence from them, or we may act this anger out by being covert with our anger, by making mean comments to them, by being objectionable or not uncooperative, or being sarcastic. These are all forms of acting our anger out because we haven't expressed it directly. Acting sadness out would maybe when we're sulking, if we're just going to a corner and we're kind of in a huff and we're just drawing attention to ourselves instead of allowing ourselves to feel the sadness. So we act these emotions out if we don't express them. Now, this acting out is very destructive in our lives because it keeps taking us away from living our truth. What we tend to do is we tend to be driven by these emotions that are not expressed. Children are very good at acting emotions out, and so if you look at a child and they're behaving in a strange way, an uncharacteristic way or an extreme way, very often they're actually experiencing an emotion which they're not allowed to express directly, and so they act it out. Unfortunately, it's often misinterpreted as being naughty or bad, and the response is to discipline the child and to just shut them down without actually inquiring about what's really going on. And I think that that's a very common experience for many of us, is that we haven't been allowed as children to express our emotions openly, and instead they've been shamed. So I've been talking quite a bit about this emotional aspect, this energy, this movement, this feminine principle, and how we can come into a more passionately alive relationship with this aspect of ourselves. And I'd like to move across now and talk a little bit more about the masculine principle, the conscious awareness, because I see both of these principles as essential to master in our lives, to have a fulfilling and rich experience. So the main thrust of the work that I'm presenting here, as far as this masculine principle, is to raise awareness, to bring to mind the state of consciousness that we're holding moment to moment. So what's involved here is a simplifying and a bringing of attention into the present moment. When we do that, we make a remarkable discovery. And the remarkable discovery is that heaven is here now. Unfortunately, we've grown up with this idea that heaven is something that you get to when you die. It's some other place. And so we have this mindset in our culture that all the time we're looking somewhere else. We're looking for something else to make us happy. We're looking for the promotion or the relationship or the holiday or the right lifestyle or losing weight. When I lose weight, then I'll be happy. If I can just get to this place, I'll be happy then. So if I can just get through this experience, I'll be happy then. But what we find when we're doing that is that in looking elsewhere, we're actually missing the experience that's rising for us in the present moment. And in looking elsewhere, we're actually splitting off from this experience here now. And this experience here now is very rich. It's very rich and it's very fulfilling. And what we find is that when we practice being in the present moment and acknowledging what's actually present, is very often there's a lot to be grateful for. Very often there's a sense that rises within us of a deep sense of gratitude for the wonderful experience that we have available to us in this moment. But unfortunately, often we live our lives preoccupied in our minds with thinking and planning and looking to other places and very little contact with the experience in the present moment, with our physical body in this moment. And so in passionately alive, we spend a certain amount of time and energy teaching people how to connect more fully with the experience that's here now. We like to say this as losing your mind and coming to your senses. And it represents a deep shift in awareness to this is it. This moment, right now, is as good as it gets. So what's involved in doing that is slowing down and taking time out of the hectic busyness of life to sit in stillness, in emptiness, and to spend quiet time reflecting. When we do this, we tend to come into a deeper relationship with more subtle parts of ourselves. And the link to the Shakti, or the feminine principle, is that whilst we have suppressed emotions from the past stored in our body, we have a certain amount of restlessness within us. And these unresolved past experiences keep taking us out of the present, that we keep splitting off away from this experience. And it's when we split off that we'll often be making our mistakes. We'll be missing out on the moment. And there's a lot of richness, moment by moment, to be experienced. So, in Passionately Alive, we celebrate the moment, and we believe that each moment is as good as any other moment. So So what's involved here is letting go of judgment, a letting go of trying to get somewhere else, and a simplifying of our lives. We encourage people to stop seeking, to stop moving, to stop trying to get somewhere else, to stop all of the doing. We tend to become human doings instead of human beings. So we like to encourage people to sit in stillness, in quietness, and to spend time just being with themselves. And that's the invitation that I'd give to you. I've heard another story about another man who fell off a cliff. And this person was actually a Buddhist monk. And as he was falling over the cliff, he saw the same bush that the first guy saw, and he noticed that there were some flowers growing from this bush. And as he went past, he took a deep breath in and he smelt the flowers and he celebrated the moment. And I think that's a great key to diminishing suffering, that if we can allow ourselves to be fully in this moment, what we find is that there are things to be celebrated and that the level of suffering diminishes. So, to be more specific here, I'd like to just propose to you a few steps that you can go through that can assist you to connect with what is. And the first one is that you need to stop. You need to be quiet and take time out. The second step is to be what we call mindful, to bring your awareness into the present moment, in the here and now. So you forget about everything that's outside of this experience in the moment. And the next thing that I would draw your attention to is to bring awareness to the emotion that you're feeling in the moment. And then you locate that emotion in your physical body. Where is that energy that's moving in your body? And the next thing to do is to accept that emotion and that experience that's rising as it is. And it helps to bring awareness to your breath and to breathe into that. And then the next thing to do is to listen and maybe to allow some movement that wants to happen to come through. So just listen to the experience that's arising. Because often, this experience that you're experiencing will have a message in it. There will be a component there. And then often, there will be an emotional energy that's also present, which will move you into some action. Maybe you feel some joy rising in the moment, or maybe some deepening of your sadness, or some deepening of your anger or fear, and you can process these feelings simply by tuning in and connecting to them and allowing them to be fully felt in your body. Some other points that may assist you in being passionately alive that I'd like to encourage you into is to engage fully in life, to take risks, to move forward. When you feel afraid, not to shrink back, not to contract, not to play it safe all the time, but to engage, to step forward. If there's something that you're doing that you don't know how to do it, then move forward and say, I'd like to find out how to do this. Or if you're feeling uncomfortable with somebody, engage with them and take a risk and share what's happening for you in that moment. You will find that that increases your aliveness. Also, make sure that you're doing what you love. Find a vocation that is meaningful and fulfilling to you. It is most disheartening and soulless to be doing a job that you do not feel motivated to do and that is not meaningful for you. So if you're in that situation, then take action to find a way that can move you into finding something that you love doing. Also, live in your integrity. Honor your inner truth all the time. Be honest and truthful with people. You will find that if you are honest and truthful with people, you'll have plenty of energy and aliveness, and you'll keep your energy clear and awake. Also, obviously, we exist in a physical body, and to experience full passionate aliveness, it's important to be fit and to eat well. So exercise regularly and eat a healthy, nutritious diet. So I've been following this Passionately Alive experience for 12 years now, and it's continued to lead me into richer, more loving, more peaceful experiences of life. Also, I noticed that there's a deep ease and flow that comes into my life when I'm willing to honor the truth. And my experience is one of increasing gratitude for this experience of being alive. I've also witnessed a trust in the perfection of the unfolding of life. It seems to me that life is like a big tapestry, and everything fits into its place, even though I won't always be aware of the place that it fits. What I've noticed is that this tapestry is present all the time, and it's only in looking backwards that I can often put the pieces into place. And it's as if I'm only getting to see this tapestry from the back. So it doesn't always make sense as I'm looking at it, but I'll always witness this perfection in the way that things come together.
That completes this audio program on being passionately alive. If you'd like to further develop your emotional intelligence, you can attend a Passionately Alive seminar. We hold them in Melbourne throughout the year. To find out more information, go to our website at www.eq.net.au. That's www.eqforelizabethqforqueen.net.au.